Your alternative talk radio contact, The Planet, KGRARadio.com.
Hey, what is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. It is me. I'm going to be driving the ship a little bit. It's Cam Hale. And I guess I should go ahead and introduce this fellow that I have in studio today. Sitting across the table from me, it's my pleasure to introduce a surprise guest, the great beast himself, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody out there? Are you guys getting ready for Halloween? We've already started some of the jack-o'-lantern carving last night. Caleb carved a nice pumpkin, and the costumes are being purchased. I told you that Luke already bought a Wolfman costume.
And?
Several weeks ago. And, of course, he's already changed his mind. I knew that would happen. Luke has a whole treasure trove of costumes. Like, literally, he probably has, like, 30 costumes. Now, some of them are left over from the twins when they were younger.
Yeah.
But the dude changes costumes all the time, so it's pretty cool. But now he wants to be the creature from the Black Lagoon. Now, you have to mind you, Luke is a huge fan of all the classic, like, 1950 monster movies. Mm-hmm. The hard part, trying to explain to him, is you might not be able to find that costume where, like, right now, if you wanted to be Pennywise the Clown, it's very easy to find because it's a new movie. It's just been released.
To him, it's just everybody knows about the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
It should be there.
Right. And I'm just like, you know, I understand you want to be that, but it may be kind of difficult to try to find the costume. So, my wife said Target had them. So, that's what they're going to be doing today, is going over there and trying to get a creature from the Black Lagoon. Or he wants to be Groot. Caleb wants to be Deadpool. Even though he's never seen the movie, I don't know how that worked. And Jacob, I'm not sure what he's going to be. He changes his mind all the time. I don't think he really cares. He's just like, because what was it the other day? He's like, I think I'm just going to be a skater. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, skateboard. I'm like, well, if you just show up in a t-shirt carrying your skateboard, the people aren't going to know you're trick or treating.
Yeah,
you're probably not going to get much candy. And then he was like, oh,
yeah.
So it hit him. He realizes the whole agenda is to acquire candy. So it doesn't really matter what the costume is, but you got to be something. Speaking of costumes, you went to a Halloween party last night. How was that?
It was a great time. We had a wonderful time.
Were you Captain Spaulding?
I was Captain Spaulding from the Devil's Rejects. Not the clown suit from the House of a Thousand Corpses, but like the funky pants and, you know, and all that stuff from the Devil's Rejects.
I didn't see any pictures.
There's a few out there, not many. Yeah.
I was expecting to see that last night.
I was going to, yeah, my daughter did all of my makeup. And did, you know what? I don't know how them women wear makeup. I don't understand how that was horrible. Put all that stuff on and
every
it's all,
day.
Golly, ladies, my goodness.
The amount of time spent.
And my daughter loves it. I mean, like, she's obsessed with it. That's what she wants to do, you know, is professional makeup and movies and television and all. That's what she wants to go to school for. She is obsessed with it. She's good at it, but I do not know how you women do it. I mean, and she's putting it up like this eyeliner under my eyes, and then she's like gluing down my eyebrows to box them in or whatever this before she starts putting on, and I'm dying. I'm just like, I hate touching my eyes. I'm like, please.
Yeah, you're having to put up with it, and you're not looking forward to doing it. Now imagine trying to put that amount of makeup on every day.
No.
What?
Look, I'm lazy enough to where I don't shave and I cut all my hair off, so I don't like to wear shoes with laces. In fact, folks, I have brought Mr. Filson into the fold. He is now the proud owner of Crocs. He wears Crocs as well as I do. And right now I've got on my Crocs with socks. I've got them rocking them in the studio.
I've got the real fancy ones, though. These look like slip-on shoes. They don't look like just like...
Mine are camouflage Crocs.
the plastic ones. Yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised once you put them on, you're going to love it. Well, let's get into some stuff.
Yeah, let's get into the news. Check this out. President Trump announced on Twitter that he will allow the release of thousands of classified documents about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy after years of delays. Now, this unexpected move means that troves of never-before-seen documents are set to be released by the National Archives by October 26th. The president believes that these documents should be made available in the interest of full transparency unless agencies provide a compelling and clear national security or law enforcement justification otherwise. Now, the National Archives has until Thursday to disclose the remaining files related to Kennedy's 1963 assassination. The trove is expected to include more than 3,000 documents, Cam, that have never been released to the public before, and more than 30,000 that have been previously released, but with redactions. Now, the Congress mandated back in 1992 that all the assassination documents to be released within 25 years, but Mr. Trump has the power to block them on the grounds that making them public would harm intelligence or military operations, law enforcement, or foreign relations. But so far, he says he has no reason to block them, that they're going to be released so very shortly, just within this upcoming week. There's going to be all these new documents that are going to be released. And they said that lots of, scholars and armchair detectives are going crazy because they can't wait to see what they're going to find. But the article also talks about how most of the stuff that people know about, it's already been disclosed and they're probably not going to find anything. Mm-hmm. But you never know. I remember when we were kids, they would always talk about, well, such and such date they're going to release all the JFK documents, mm-hmm. and it was convenient that almost everybody that was involved in the assassination or around there would probably be dead after that release. And it was always like, oh yeah, well, there's no wonder they're going to release them after they're all dead, so yeah. You can't do anything. But here we are now, and the day is finally here, and so who knows, maybe there's going to be some interesting findings in those documents. I mean, many things have come out over the years about, like, Lee Harvey Oswald's trip to Mexico City just weeks before the killing, mm-hmm. meeting with the Soviet Union, things like that. There was lots of things detailed in the Warren Commission, and, of course, numerous. I think I saw a study or a survey, actually, a year or so ago. I think we went to the assassination site with Logan Huffman. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this, how they interview Americans anyways. Now, I don't know about other people, but especially Americans, they're like 90% of people believe that it was a conspiracy. But yet, it's funny to me that like no one wants to hold anybody's feet to the fire.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. We all know that. Yeah, the government killed our president. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm like, well, yeah, you don't think that's odd? Nobody raises any questions?
Everybody's like, yeah, well, it happened.
I also saw a recent survey showing where an incredible amount of people now, I think up to 75% of Americans polled, believe that there was an ancient civilization before the Ice Age.
Oh.
And also a vast majority of people believe that aliens had contacted people in the past. And it makes you but wonder, is this a side effect of the series Ancient Aliens that's on TV?
And YouTube.
Is it a side effect of, just things? I'd like to believe that, right?
Well, what I mean is like podcasts in general.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Sharing the information. Is it, and look, could it be true? Yeah, could it not be true? Yeah, I mean, it's disinformation spread just as easily as
information. Oh, absolutely. But so. As far as ancient civilizations before the Ice Age, I 100% believe in that.
I'll tell you what I noticed about... the book depository when we went there was I always thought it was difficult. It was going to be a difficult shot for Lee Harvey Oswald to make, and you're led to
believe
till you go there. And then when you go there, anyone that's familiar with firearms, you especially shooting a rifle, you're like, yeah, that's not a hard shot to make at all. And then you look at exactly where it's at and the angles of, like we talked about, being on the grassy knoll, the different angles of it. You're like, yeah, he was caught in a crossfire of bullets. It was one of those ones where it's the perfect spot to ambush somebody is right where he was shot.
Yeah. Because if you look at the direction where it comes and then it snakes around.
And there's no reason for it to snake where it does.
No.
Yeah, and they took that route.
They're moving them directly into a choking point where they can assassinate somebody. Yeah, because, look, it's the President of the United States. I don't care if it's a one-way street or not. You can block the roads off and have cars. I mean, as long as it's a paved road, you can have the cars go wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was set up.
It was when you go there, and folks, if you ever had the inkling and you'd like to go there, I urge you to do so, to go check it out. It's very interesting to be at that site and to see it, to put it in context.
It's free.
Yeah.
Free to the public.
Yeah. The films and television shows don't, it's like anything else. It doesn't really do it justice till you're standing there in that area and you're like, okay.
I associate it with, like, whenever you watch football on TV or baseball or hockey or anything, any of the sports, when you look at the football field, it seems ginormous. When you're watching it on television.
Yeah.
Then when you actually go there, you're like, ah, well, 100 yards, that ain't that far.
Still just 100 yards.
It looks like they're throwing, you know, when you throw like a 40-yard pass, it looks like they're throwing it halfway down a mile, you know? And you're there and you're like, oh, well, my 10-year-old kid can throw that.
Right. Yeah.
It looks, I think it's one of those things. So when you see it on television, it looks like, man, he must have been a really good shot.
Yeah.
And then when you get there, you're like, nah, I'm pretty sure some teenage boys could probably pull that off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very close.
Yeah. You wouldn't have to be you wouldn't have to be extremely well trained as they make it out to be to make those shots.
I don't think so.
I don't believe so at
all. He was a marksman in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, a marksman easily could pull that shot off.
Yes, very easily.
Very interesting. It's probably one of the world's biggest conspiracy theories ever, so.
I'm curious to see what comes of this when it all comes out.
I'm sure we'll know that in the next couple of weeks, so that'll be interesting, yeah.
Well, I've got this link emailed to us from a listener named Walt, and Walt lived right outside of Pittsburgh and actually knew where this place was. And then I go to looking into it, and Lon had posted it. So he had found it on Phantoms and Monsters. And I want to tell you about this. It's very interesting. It's called The Little Man in the School Basement. And the fellow that sent this in to Lon, it says, I was in second grade, and I don't know if it was the spring or the fall of 1967, but it was during recess, and the weather was warm enough to play outside. My classmate and I walked to the side of the school, which is Peebles Elementary in North Allegheny School District in Pittsburgh, during recess. Now, all of the other children were in the main play area at the back of the school, and our school janitor, Mr. Swan, appeared and waved us over toward the basement area of the school. That's never good. There was an entryway into the furnace room of the school. Now, Mr. Swan told us to come over and see what was in the furnace room. Inside, there was a small Jetson-like disc. It would have been about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. It had seating for two. I don't have a clear memory of the vehicle, except that it was a silvery gray metallic color, very smooth. I can't clearly remember the roof of the craft, but I think it was clear or missing entirely. I vaguely remember a panel of controls and something like blue vinyl seats. My friend said, Mr. Swan caught the flying saucer in the baseball field of the school. And I remember her sliding down against the wall and falling asleep. Then a gray man appeared from behind the furnace. I remember laughing because my girlfriend fell asleep, and then being amazed at the little man. He was about the same size as me. I was not afraid of him at all. He talked to me in my head and through feelings and thoughts. He never moved his mouth. He had skin the color and shading like ashes from a cigarette. I don't recall any clothing or any sexual characteristics about him. He had large black eyes, but they were kind and sincere. He had no nose, maybe just a couple of small holes, and his mouth was just sort of a line. It didn't open. I don't remember any ears. He had long arms for the size of his body, and I think only four fingers on each hand, which seemed very long, and he kept his arms to his sides. He had two legs, and his feet seemed different somehow from ours. I simply can't remember exactly what they were like. His body was childlike, but not muscular at all. And he said to me in my head, "We are here to remind you who you are." And I still, to this day, have no idea what he meant. And I'm 49 now. Somehow, I was able to know how the flying saucer worked. It had something to do with a force of energy, which pushed out at the bottom of the craft, along with a corresponding force which sucked in. It makes me think of what a hovercraft is, like only with much more force and no sound. This was what broken or was broken on the craft, and the janitor had taken it inside to hide it while the entity was repairing it. There was another little man somewhere in the room who was injured from the crash. I have no recollection of him except for the sensing that he was there and that he was hurt. Now, my mother recalls me coming home from school and talking about Mr. Swan and the flying saucer. My mom was concerned about me being escorted into the basement of the school by the janitor, but after asking me several questions, was satisfied that nothing inappropriate had occurred, but I never mentioned the little man. Now, something tells me I was supposed to remember the man until later in life, because I do not remember the man until, or I didn't, until I was 29. My school friend only remembers the craft and described it as having no bolts or rivets because she grew up with a dad who flew a small plane and would know those terms to describe a plane. She has no recollection of a little man, but then again, she had fallen asleep when he appeared. Now, I've told this story to friends and family only for fear of being ridiculed. My children are in this school, and it's been remodeled. I've never asked anyone at the school about the craft or dear Mr. Swan. He's got to be in his 80s now. I sure wish I knew what the little man was referring to when he said that they were here to remind me who I was.
And that is, and it's almost like the janitor was working with him. Like,
yeah.
Like he's like, oh yeah, these are my like alien buddies.
Well, it makes me wonder if he didn't take over the janitor, you know, mentally.
That's true.
Coerced. What is it? Glammed. He glammed the janitor and then he put the little gal to sleep. I mean, I don't know.
Was it a really, was that the normal janitor? Like maybe it was like a Men in Black kind of guy. He was like, oh yeah, I'm Mr. Swan. I'm the custodian here.
Or maybe that's what this guy dreamt up as a child because something inappropriate did happen down there.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought when I read this whole deal is I'm like, look, it's a great story, but did something truly inappropriate happen down there? And this is what you've covered it up. This is what you've built around it. Now, he does say that the girl, though, doesn't remember anything. She fell asleep.
Yeah.
I understand bringing one down, but not two. It's just very odd. I mean, I don't want to think the worst, but maybe he did have some kind of contact with this little thing. But when he starts talking about, we're here to remind you who you are.
Yeah, that's...
Is it he personally, or is it, you know, mankind as a whole, who you are? Because it makes you start thinking about what you said before, people believing in a more advanced culture prior to the Ice Age. Is that what are these people, you know, who knows? There's all these what ifs and could be's after that, but it is a very interesting story.
Very interesting. Speaking of interesting, check this out. There's a hair cutting ghost apparently on the loose in India.
Yeah, I was there. Got all my hair gone.
The Hindustan Times is reporting that police in Western Rajasthan are at their wits' end trying to solve a bizarre series of cases reported by families in the region. Now, reports claim that women and young girls are being plagued by a hair cutting ghosts. A woman said a few days ago, my 13-year-old daughter, Asha, was sleeping in the night when someone chopped off a thick bunch of her hair. We came to know about the incident when she woke up and started crying. Now, the Phantom Barber started its attacks in June, and to date, authorities have received dozens of similar reports from across the region. Police started getting calls about the strange attacks at that time, and social media posts added to the furor. Rumors spread like wildfire, and a weird panic has set in throughout several villages. Now, many of the citizens believe that a group practicing black magic is to be blamed. These evil magical practitioners purportedly have the ability to shapeshift, and it is said they gain their powers by cutting the hair of unsuspecting females. So, what is this? There's a group of guys?
Somebody has gone in to study black magic so deeply just so they can go invisible and cut young girls' hair.
Yeah. That's apparently, this is what's going on in small villages in India.
Aleister Crowley's rolling over in his grave right now because somebody's gone so deep into the dark magics that that's all they're going to do with it. Let's not bring in any demons. Let's not try to possess people. Let's not try to get people to make millions of money. I know what. Let's cut the hair of underage girls.
And women.
Oh, and women.
Women and young girls. And women. Yeah, apparently just those two. It says that there's a panic. People are freaking out. They don't know what to do. But I'm not sure why they call it ghosts, you know, haircutting ghosts, because to me...
Because they're not seeing them.
Well, I realize that, but I mean, it's kind of a play on words. I don't think it's a ghost. I think it's just some creep.
Some creeper.
Whatever reason is going around thinking... And, you know, when it says village, like, you know, you don't know what to picture. I'm picturing not... you know, brick homes. You know, you're picturing like people living in ramshacks, and I guess you could just sneak up and just cut a lock of hair and then move on. I don't know.
I wished I would have filmed the move that he just did. You should have seen the look on his face, and he's using his fingers like scissors, and he's acting like he's sneaking up on somebody while he's talking about it.
I mean, I don't know. This is crazy. It's just like we always talk about. Like, here I'm sitting in a modern studio at the same time someone's living in some poor village where people are walking around cutting people's hair.
Okay, let's play devil's advocate. Let's say it's real. Let's say the ghost, the hair cutting ghost, what would they need the hair for?
It says for black magic is all it says.
But the whole idea of the ghost, so it could be somebody just going invisible, shape-shifting.
Something
along those lines.
Yeah, the magical practitioner have the ability to shape-shift, and they gain their powers.
The esteemed lore master and magical practitioner, Kyle Filson.
They gain their powers by cutting the hair of unsuspecting females. So I guess if a female agrees to let you cut her hair, it doesn't have the same power.
Oh,
it's only unsuspecting females.
I got you.
Yeah, right? Crazy. They need to get Dollar Shave Club to sponsor them.
That's right. For the unsuspecting black magic haircutting shapeshifters. That sounds like the name of a good band. I have something coming here from MUFON.com. Our homie Roger Mosh published this, and this is really interesting because a witness reports missing time after military helicopter and UFO. Now, you and I both are fans of missing time. Not when it happens to us, of course, reading about it, but you're going to enjoy this. Says a Pennsylvania witness at Homer City reported being woken by the sound of a military helicopter and then saw a triangle-shaped object that seemed to cause a loss of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now sounds like the Cash Landrum.
Here we go. Incident. Case number. Everybody get your pen and paper. 81494 of the Mutual UFO Network Witness Reporting Database says that the witness was sleeping at 9 p.m. on January 8th. Of 2017 when he was awoken to a low humming sound that seemed to be coming from every direction. The witness states this: I then saw what appeared to be a low flying Apache or Black Hawk helicopter. It slowly flew by, and afterward the humming got intense. Says the witness then saw an object in the sky that pulsated with red, white, and orange lights. That's what they say. That this is the witness says that they were also softly pulsating. I looked at my clock when I woke up, and it said that 25 or so minutes have passed, but it felt like it was no more than 2 or 3. I really hope that doesn't mean what I think it does. I tried to dismiss it as just me being tired, but I fear that I have had time loss. After what seemed like a minute, the saucer shot away and then changed directions very abruptly. Afterward, another or the same black helicopter came through the direction the UFO was going to fly until it changed direction. I just want answers to what this was. I want rationality. Now, the field investigator there in Pennsylvania, Jason Geis, investigated the case and said that, of course, closed it as unknown, like as you would. And Jason had this to say, that the object was estimated to be between 90 and 100 feet long. So according to the witness. And said that during the interview, the witness alluded to a possible abduction situation. Said that he had time, the missing time, of approximately 25 minutes, and said that he had hot marks on his arm. They were beginning to fade, and he sent me a picture of the marks. He then went on to explain that a few weeks ago, he felt a presence in his bedroom, and at one point felt as if something was pulling at his legs, although he could not see anything. Yeah, now how disturbing is that? Now, of course, it says Homer City is a borough there in Indiana County. It says the population is 1,707 people. So it's a small rural town. But the idea of there being a military stuff, like we've talked before, you do it where there's not a lot of people.
Right. Yeah.
And the military helicopters, escorting this thing. So either it is ours or we are working with it. If it was a military helicopter or breakaway society, however you want to do it. But the whole thing of the missing time. Is makes me wonder is, okay, let's say this. Did he see more than he's recalling? Let's not say he was abducted and they did something to him to put him to sleep for those few minutes.
Well, so you're right.
He didn't see that. And or much was like, he truly abducted?
Yeah, much like you were talking about with the little thing in the basement. There's lots of abductees that are reported to have false memories implanted. You know, that's why you think you saw an owl. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that time I saw that big owl. You didn't see a big owl. But they put that in your brain so you rationalize it and you move on with your life. You don't think about it too much.
You move on.
It's possible.
It is possible, yeah.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Is it possible? You know, what is that? Always on Ancient Aliens?
Yes.
Is it possible that ancient aliens visited Santa Claus, you know, thousands of years? And you're always like, well, yeah, it's, I guess it's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah. It's disturbing, though. The whole missing time thing is kind of a freaky, freaky deal. And folks, when we get back from the break, I've got a freaky, freaky deal I'm going to discuss. We're going to talk about some giant snakes again, but we're going to be talking about them in the Southwest, here in the United States. It's very strange stuff, so I hope you enjoy it. When we get back, giant snakes of the Southwest, folks, you are listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, folks, let's get down to it. This is something that is, I don't know. I don't know if you want to say it's intriguing or if it's scary. I don't know what people like, what people don't like. I personally have no problems with snakes. I'm not one of those people that's afraid of snakes. I used to work with a guy that was terrified, like water hose around him. You could leave just a piece of rope, anything along those lines. He would lose his stuff. He was not a fan.
I'm the same way. I'm not really terrified by snakes. Spiders to me are way scarier than snakes.
Because you can't hear them?
I don't know. They just seem like they bite you for no reason. Where snakes, I mean, generally, if you leave snakes alone, they'll leave you alone.
Yes, that's pretty much.
And they're good for the environment. I know that spiders are too, but like spiders will bite you while you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Never had a snake just crawl in and bite me.
Just come slipping in on you, you know, slide in the house and get you.
Most of the time, if people do get bit, it's because they accidentally stepped on the thing.
You surprised it or you're messing with it. Yeah. I mean, there are those outliers where stuff has happened, where they've come after people, stuff like that.
Absolutely.
But for the most part, Well, you remember that we've discussed Colonel Fawcett, and we've talked about all that stuff, talked about him seeing the giant snakes, and the giant anaconda, like over 60 foot was a giant anaconda, you know, and there's been reports of those giant anacondas back in, the 20s and the 30s, and there's even reports even now of people coming across and seeing the giant anacondas and giant snakes. We've even discussed before, what is his name? Remy Van Leerd. Remember, he was the pilot that took the picture underneath it. I believe Remy is his name. Colonel Remy, the Belgium fighter pilot that took the photo of the giant snake down there and all that stuff.
Well, and you can actually see the photo.
Yeah, you can actually pull that up. Yeah, that was actually, it was off of Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World down there in the Belgian Congo is what it was. And it was, he described it as being close to 50 feet long, right? And 3 foot head, 2 foot wide. I mean, just something that you can't even fathom because it's so terrifying. So I was looking into this and just messing around with all that because it got me to thinking about being in South Texas on a trip. I was on a hunting trip one time down there, and there was a lot of rattlesnakes in this area, which would be what we call Texas diamondbacks, or known as Western diamondbacks. And for every now and again, and for anybody on social media on any type, you will notice that it will make its rounds where the guys have got it. They've killed this rattlesnake. They're holding it in a clamp, or they've got it on a clamp like the snake catchers, or they've got it on a branch, and they're holding it right towards the camera.
Uh-huh.
So it puts it all in a skew. Nothing is proper in the exact sizing.
They do the same thing with like large hogs.
Yes, and fish. Everything.
You'll stage the pig, and then you'll get step back maybe 3 or 4 feet, and so it makes it look like it's three times the size.
The perspective has changed completely.
Yeah.
They never, in all these stories that they all talk about these giant snakes, you never do see them with a tape measure.
Right.
And the snake laid out, and they've got the tape measure on it, where you actually have something as reference in the
something
film.
Something for scale.
They never do that, you know, and all that stuff. But I also know people that would collect snakes, you know, would go out on these snake roundups, things like this down here. And they claim, you know, that they would find 6-footers and 7-footers and all that, which are huge rattlesnakes. I mean, the common length of a Texas diamondback rattlesnake is like 4 feet.
Mm.
You think about all the ones you've ever seen. Very rarely do you see them over about 4 foot long. That's a big rattlesnake.
I remember when I was a kid, like, you'd always hear these tales of like a den of them on somebody's property, and there was hundreds in there. And, you know, I've never seen one in my
life.
I've
seen one where they retrieved, well, down in Granbury, actually down in Acton, where they gassed and retrieved probably 75.
So is that real? I mean, like I said, I've always heard these stories. I personally have never seen.
I watched them pull them out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, okay. I stood there and watched them pull them out of there.
So I'm always like, as a kid, I'm always, or as a young adult, I was like, yeah, I've heard all those stories. I don't know if any of that's real.
Well, and I'd heard stories about, you know, 7 and 8 foot rattlesnakes. And I don't know, you know, you get caught up in it, but I had seen them crossing the road in front of us down there, south of San Antone. There's a little place called Catula, and we were down on a big ranch in Catula. And if you folks look, pull it up, it's just big, vast ranches. It was over 10,000 acres that we were on. And the rattlesnakes would lay up in the top of yucca plants. So they would be about 3 foot off the ground sometimes, 2 or 3 foot. So they'd be, you know, belly high. So you're walking by them, hear them rattling. They are stomach height. You're not worried about your legs. I'm talking they'll strike you in the gut, maybe in the face. I mean, you're talking about there. It was really wild while we were down there. But we saw some that were easily 6 foot. That if you take the tracks of a truck going, like, say, down a dirt road, they would be in the tracks, like one part and the other part, head and tail. And so I was like, man, those, but you would start thinking, oh, those are huge. They're as big around as drill stem, like 2-inch pipe. You know, they're giant snakes. Well, you start looking at, there are some that are 6 footers. They're said they're very rare, but there are some that are 6 footers. I'm like, okay, so that's not too crazy. I'm going to start reading you some stories, though, of some stuff that sounds almost crazy. And this actually took place, and what's funny is we've talked about some of this stuff in the past, but in 1990 there was a relief route that was being built west of Roswell, New Mexico. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they had uncovered a place there. They called it the Jornada Mogollon Pit Village is the name of it. So it's some old ruins out in this area that they had found. And they said what was odd was because on one of these walls, there was a painting, a clay painting, and it was 15 feet long, and it was of a giant feathered serpent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, you know, I get all this stuff, which was, you know, it's kind of strange, but, you know, we get it, no big deal. You start digging around into history of some of this stuff. There used to be some stories that the Mescalero Apaches told, okay? And when I was in New Mexico up there near the Mescalero Reservation and all this stuff that where they live in the mountains, and it's beautiful there in New Mexico, but there's also parts where they were, you know, out in the desert and all this stuff. But there were some stories that came from them that said that they would have sheep. Some of the sheep that they would have would disappear over time, and that when they would find it, that it had been, you could tell it had been bitten by a rattlesnake. It's what, you know, the rattlesnakes had bitten this sheep. But they said when they opened it up, that the insides of this thing was dissolved. Like, so there was so much venom injected into the sheep, and it didn't just happen once. It had happened multiple times, but that it had dissolved their insides.
Hmm.
So then it starts making you wonder, well, is it a whole bunch of snakes or one great big one? I mean, of course, you know, that's how a rattlesnake, that's what the venom does, is it kills the flesh and the muscle and all that from around the strike. So it does make you wonder, was it a huge snake that bit this sheep? You know, what's going on? Because there's not multiple bites. There's nothing like that. There's also an account from two anthropologists that were back in the 1940s in this area that said that they had heard tales from the locals and the natives in these areas that there was a cave full of what was called snake people. So when you think about the snake people, you got to think about like 13th Warrior. Remember those cave bear people that was in that movie?
Yeah, waves make thunder.
That's right. That's, yeah.
The thunder cliffs.
And they called it the fire worm.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember
yeah.
the fire? And it was just them riding horses coming down carrying torches. Well, that's what this whole idea was, is there was this tribe that was living in these caves up there in the 40s that were snake people. So these anthropologists said, well, you know, now's as good a time as any. Let's go check this out. Let's go see if, well, first of all, you're thinking, let's make a name for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
That's the first thing you want to do. So you're like, all right, let's go see what we can find out about all this stuff. So they go get some help. And they set up some tripods above this cave entrance where they actually have to be lowered into this cave entrance. The story goes that they had these ranchers that were around there that come to help them, that had told them about these caves, lower them in there. So they've got the board that they're sitting on with the ropes tied through it like a swing,
mm-hmm.
and they're holding on to their stuff. They get lowered down in there. They're going down through there. the ranchers had even started talking. They started hearing all kinds of noise, and then they started hearing the men screaming. And they said when they start hearing the men screaming, they start hearing a buzzing noise like that of, like you'd think of bees.
Yeah.
But they said it's not bees, it's rattles. So you start thinking that's rattlesnakes. So they start trying to get them up. They start, well, hoist them up. The story goes that it is told by these ranchers, these men that were there, that only one man was still on the ropes. The other one was still down there. They couldn't get him out. But by the time he got him, they got the other one out, he was already dead when they pulled him out. And that he, now they say that there was an extremely high amount of venom, rattlesnake venom, in his body.
Wow.
So, makes you wonder, was there truly a snake people's living down there, or was they lowered down into a giant
nest
den, big den of snakes, and then something, they were all over them, and they were getting bit, and it's just one of those deals. More of the story carried on after all that, and it went on that, now this is something that's really going to be strange, that after coming back into town with the body and going straight to the authorities and telling them what had happened, and the authorities going up and checking it out and making sure that it wasn't a murder, you know, making sure that there was no foul play, the authorities of this area get a hold of some of the wildlife guys and stuff. They come up there and they seal the entrance. They bring in rocks and all kinds, and they basically seal off where that cave entrance was, where there's nobody getting back in there. Like, no, if it's snakes, whatever, just leave them alone. We're going to put it up. We don't need anything falling in there. That's it. Well, it was reported to the authorities later on that a few weeks after that, that there was a new entrance that somebody had seen on the other side from where that cave was of another area, and that it, the not the rocks for that hole that had been closed, but the other set on the other side had been pushed out, like something had pushed its way out of the cave and come back out. So then it starts making you, well, snakes aren't going to push away stones to get out of an area. So you're like, well, what the heck was down in there? So that brings us, of course,
so there's like slea stacks living in there.
Makes you think. Yeah. Makes you think. So that brings us, of course, to different. We start talking about giant snakes killed. All these places in the Guadalupe Mountains, there's not really giant snakes in certain areas of these mountainous regions. Just certain, or I say as a broad hole, I'm sorry, as a broad hole, there's not. There's a place that's, you know, there's a place that's called the Bottomless Lake, and as people have claimed that they've seen, you know, snakes that are over 12 feet long in and around that area. There is a story that come from a fella that lived in Roswell, was a truck driver out of Roswell, and he relayed a story that back in 2002 he was actually at work driving one of his trucks over a bypass bridge, crossing over Brunetto Bridge, and he said what he thought he saw was a limb just laying over in the road, and he was like, huh. So he kind of changes lanes and swerves around it so he doesn't, you know, run over this limb. And he'd said that when he passed this limb, it was 12 feet, a 12-foot long, covering all the lanes, that when he passed it, the limb raised up off the ground about 6 feet, and it was actually a snake.
There's snakes out here this big?
Yeah. Oh, c'est donc. Yeah, right? The odd thing about it was is that he said that it was a yellowish-brown color. Now, they ask him, they go, hey, man, what could this have been? I mean, the authorities, he went straight to the authorities on that and was like, there is a giant snake sunning itself out here on the road. And like, this isn't normal. This isn't what you would normally see. Like, this could cause a real issue if there's somebody walking, somebody riding a bike. Like, it reared up towards my truck.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about invasive species living in the Everglades, like people, you know, turning loose pet anacondas or boa constrictors. This is in the desert.
Yes.
Southwest. Yes. So a snake like that would not be able to survive in that type of climate.
Well, it's funny you bring it up because they asked, they said, hey, man, could this be a circus animal that got loose? Because you got to think of back then, too. I say back then, it's 2002. Maybe somebody had come through. Maybe somebody had released it. Like you said, maybe somebody had it as a pet and was just like, I'm done with this thing, man. This thing's gotten way too big. It's 12 foot. It wasn't supposed to get more than about, you know, 5 foot. I can't handle it. And they'd throw it out. And he said, no, it looked more like a common whip snake. He said, it looked more like something that you would see around here every day. It's just abnormally large. And then, of course, which is funny, a lot of this stuff happens around Roswell, New Mexico, which is really odd, too. because you start instantly thinking, is this something, you know, okay, as crazy as it sounds, is this something in the soil left over from the crash? Is this something of, is there being experiments done, or is there something nuclear testing? You know, what has caused something like this to get this size? What would cause it to be along these deals? They also talk about ranchers that have even claimed that they've killed giant snakes in and around these areas, that they have found holes in and around caves where there's these giant snakes, and that they have come out of there. And even there's even a few that said that look like bearded or frilled lizards, but they're snakes, like a frilled snake's got that on them. People report seeing large lizards, some really strange stuff that's been seen in and around these areas. And like you said, it's in the desert. It's, you know, of course, now we've also reported on reptilian sightings in the desert and in these areas out here. But it's one of those deals that you would, for some reason, you would think it would be more in the jungles of seeing a giant snake than in the heats of this desert. Now, of course, there are mountains in these areas, and it is beautiful in certain areas. But also, too, out around Roswell, it's not so pretty. I mean, like, it's more of a desert, you know, as far as mountainous areas. It's not like you would think when you start thinking about the mountains of New Mexico or Colorado, it's not the same. So it always makes you wonder. But I will say this, if you do a little digging, Roswell Daily Record, that newspaper, published a thing back in 1960, July 12th to be exact, that said a 300-pound rattler, okay?
300 pounds.
And on the front page was a picture of two fellas, a fella named Mike Gonzalez and another fella named Juan Baca. And they're holding up an 18-foot-long skin, snake skin, is what they've got with them.
Okay.
They're from Lincoln County. Right, so that's where they're all these dudes are hanging out. And they said that they had actually been in the Valley of Fires west of Carrizo. So they were looking around for some burrows while they were down there, and that they had seen what they said was a telephone pole-sized snake resting on a dry lake bed. That's what they had found. They say, and this is what they both agree. And this was Mr. Gonzalez that was telling them this, and he's even and this story even made it all the way to the Ruidoso newspapers too. And Mr. Gonzalez had even stated, he said, "I thought I saw the ground moving up and down." And he goes, "But it was the snake breathing." So undoubtedly it blended in very well.
Okay. Right?
Undoubtedly. Now, when I tell you this is all, now you have to imagine this, an 18-foot long diamondback rattlesnake, like we have here, but it's an 18-footer. So, story goes, they said, man, we start shooting at it. We're freaking out, right? This is, holy hell, there's a giant snake. So, they start busting rounds off at it. Well, they said at the front end, it raises up about 5 foot off the ground. They said the problem is it's raised up looking around. They can't seem to get any penetration with their rounds. Nothing's happening. They said just bullets are just bouncing off. Said finally, it makes an entrance. Finally, they get a few bullets to penetrate, and it finally kills it. So, and here's what's wild. They said, okay, well, I said, it's going to take several horses for us to haul this 18-foot, 300-pound snake out of here. Because you got to, it's not like you're hauling a 300-pound pig. You're hauling a 300-pound piece of pipe, basically, what you're moving around with.
Right.
So they said, you know what, let's do? Let's just skin it. We'll just leave the rest of it here. Let's just skin this snake and get it out of here.
Like a lot of boots, a lot of belts.
Yeah. So that's what they do. So they take this and they bring it in. Well, of all these counties in and around that area, people are going crazy. Even El Paso, they start offering up money, $100 for anybody to kill a snake in New Mexico over 8 feet long. That's what they're looking for. $100. You bring us the body of a snake over 8 feet long. Later on, turns out it's not real. This whole story, the whole story about the snake and them shooting all that stuff, has all been faked. And the reason, this is how it came out. First of all, it's not an 18-foot rattlesnake, okay?
Okay.
It was a skin that it was a boa constrictor skin, is what it was. It had been found in the trash in a dumpster in Ruidoso. One of these guys' buddies was a trash man. And he called him up and said, "Hey, I found this snake skin. You know, check this out." They traded him for the snake skin. They traded him 10 chickens. They brought him 10 chickens to the trash man, swapped it to him for this whole deal. And then they came up with this big elaborate story, hoping to get some money out of this whole thing. That's what they created. So still, it's built off of the idea of giant snakes in these areas, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm with you.
So there's also stories of a guy named Dr. Bolliner, and Dr. Bolliner had told some stories to Roswell about dealing with some giant snakes. And his story, he said, was from, and now look, now there's a lot of wild stuff that goes on in all these things here, but his story's from 1931. The story says that he was on a hunting trip with a lady friend, okay? Mm-hmm. Of course, the doctor's out there with his lady friend. They were hunting rabbits, so they had their 22s, you know, of course, not 10 22s, but a little 22 rifle. And he tells his story. He said, I had the 22. I should have probably had my shotgun at this whole thing. But the story goes that they're out in this real rough area out near Roswell, and that they had shot a couple of rabbits. And they said that it just, there wasn't as many rabbits as you would think. Said it was springtime. They believe, you know, it's May. So they believe that, man, we should have way more rabbits than this. They should have several more. So they start looking more and more and more. So they decide to split up. Well, when they split up, the doctor decides, you know what? I know where there's a large sinkhole. Okay. A real large sinkhole in this area. Said, you know, I know there's probably not many people down in. I'm going to go look over there because nobody ever goes in this area. Maybe that's where there's a little more plentiful hunting than what we're coming across. We're just not seeing what we should have seen. Now, he said this sinkhole was around 50 feet across. So he gets there. He's kind of scouting it. He takes his time. He sits down. He gets him a drink of water. He's looking. He's like, man, maybe I should go down inside it. I've not seen around the edge of what I want. You know, maybe I should go down in there and let's see what's down in there. Maybe I can kind of, you know, make a little move on some little rabbits down in here. So he says he decides, I'm going to climb down in it. He said it's only about 50 foot at the deepest point of this sinkhole down there. He said about 8 foot at the most shallow areas. He's like, it's real easy. So he goes down in there. He goes, now it's got the rocks and the crags sticking out of it as he gets out in that sinkhole. He goes, as he's walking down in this sinkhole, he starts noticing there's bones everywhere around him. And he notices that they're rabbit bones, and lots and lots and lots of them.
Right.
So he's like, I'm getting a little uneasy, right? A little uneasy at this point. And he goes, it's about this time I stop. He said, I'm taking this all in, and I notice this rattlesnake is coming towards him. And this is what he said about it. He said, I had only one thing to do, and that was to shoot him without delay. And my first shot struck him about 3 inches back from the head and stunned him. So just at this time, out came another of equal size with open mouth and tongue out. And he was coming straight for me and only about 2 feet behind the first one. I shot the second one about a foot back from the head. Now, both of these snakes were only crippled. I knew I had to do what I was going to do quickly, so I gave both snakes bullets as fast as I could to stop their approach. Now, he says, after that, there was a third snake came out. And he shot and hit rocks is what he is. He can't really tell, but he said it blinded this thing. And he said, so now it's actually biting at the ground. Boom, boom, you know, just trying to get in the whole deal. Well, the doctor is like, I'm looking at here, look at there. He goes, that's when I realized, dude, I've got no more ammo. You know, he's like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble now. So he's like, all right, what am I going to do? So by this time, the female, his lady friend, she hears what's all the gunfire going on. So here she comes. She's like, what the heck? So he climbs up out of there. Now, he does not say anything about the length. He gets up out of there. He's like, I don't know what was going on, but he was like, these snakes were big, real big. Now, this is what he said. One had 22 rattles. The other had 20. And he goes, they were the size of a man's arm at the shoulder. So that's how big around they were. Now, like I said, he doesn't go into the fact that they are super long, just that they were beefy. Now, when they start talking about rattles, everybody says, well, they shed their skin every year. That's not necessarily true. It's not necessarily like a birthday shed. It's not on a yearly basis. But, I mean, you can kind of go off that. That's how many times it's shed its skin. So the more rattles it has, the older it's been alive, the longer this snake has lived. So these weren't necessarily super old snakes that he's talking about it. Well, there's also an author named Lynn Mickelson, and Lynn wrote a book called Roswell, Your Travel Guide to the ET Capital of the World. And she even talked about a place that was found there in Roswell that the New Mexico Highway Department covered up, and that goes back to the Jornada Magalan village. That one was paved over. They paved a road over the top of it where they found the painting of that giant snake, like I was talking about, that they had, you know, apparently put on this pottery, which instantly, when you start thinking about a plumed serpent, I start thinking about Quetzalcoatl.
Yeah, the Mayan.
I start thinking about this, which is who they thought Coronado was. You know, I'm sorry, Cortez was, who they believed that he was the coming back, the plumed serpent that was coming through there. So you start looking at all this stuff, and it's, that's a very, very strange thing. So I'm laying all this out because we're going to just, this is like part of the origin that gets back into those Pecos ruins that's just east of Santa Fe up in the mountains in that area. Now, if you go there, there's some old scattered stone ruins, and these are what remains of what was once the largest native pueblo in all the Southwest. Now, the archaeologists believe that this very site has been the setting of continuous human habitation that cover a 7,000-year period of people living in these areas. Now, the local peoples there of this area call this place Sicuye, but the Spanish named it Pecos. Now, the actual origin of the name Pecos is highly debated when you start breaking this stuff down. Now, they say it's most likely derived from the Latin word pecus, which means a single head of cattle. All right, that's what they think. Now, there's a lot of other people that argue that. They argue that it's a Spanish verb, pecar, which means to sin or to do wrong. And they believe that it was substantiated by the use of Pecos as a verb, of course, in the late 19th century. Now, cattlemen, ranchers and all that stuff, they refer to it as being Stolanus or a Pecos swap. For the less fortunate, it says to Pecos or someone to murder someone too. Now, they also go on that says there's some other claims that the Spanish word means freckled. Pecoso, they say that's what it's named after. Pecoso, that means freckled. Now, nobody could ever understand why you would call a river freckled. Pecoso, why you would, you know, the Pecos River, why you would go into that. But with that knowledge, some claim that this place was once occupied by red-haired giants or an unknown Viking settlement of the explorers that lived there, which would be red-faced or red-haired or freckled, that when they saw this. Now, in 1540, while exploring the area for the lost cities of Cibola, there was a lieutenant in Coronado's army that was being accompanied, of course, by other soldiers, and they made their way to Sicuye. Now, they reported that the homes in this area had no doors, but was roughly four stories high, and that they used ladders like drawbridges, that they could be lifted away from the earth to stop anyone from entering these buildings. And they reported that they believed this village to be very strong, like a strong, well-guarded, well-built, well-reserved building. Willa Cather wrote a book called Death Comes for the Archbishop in 1927, and she placed the main character in this very mysterious place. And when she was asked why, this is what she had to say about this whole thing. This is her word. She says, Pecos has more than its fair share of dark legends. This tribe was particularly addicted to snake worship.
Okay.
They kept rattlesnakes concealed in their houses, and somewhere in the mountains guarded an enormous serpent, which they brought to the pueblo for certain feasts. It was said that they sacrificed young babies to the great snake and thus diminished their numbers. So, now we're back to rattlesnakes. This is a snake people. So now we go back into the snake people in the cave. We go back to the rattlesnakes being around there, being aggressive, almost being like protectors.
Right.
And then we go back to the giant snake story. It's funny that it's all still relative now as what we found out then. But in Willa's book, the character Father Latour is actually caught in a massive whiteout style type snowstorm, and it's at this point his native guide Jacinto leads the pair of men to a cave near the Pecos ruins.
Okay.
And in this cave there's charred wood and the remains of a large fire, and it's at this point Jacinto tells the father there that this cave is secret and known only to a few, and that he must forget all about it. And in the story, Jacinto then proceeds to go to the rear of the cave, where he takes rocks and seals up what the father said looked to be an old doorway. Jacinto then returns, builds a large fire where the original fire was, and the two men set way down at the storm, And, you know, the father just starts thinking about what could Jacinto have sealed up.
Yeah.
What's going on in this whole story? Like I said, this is a fictional story, but this is, it's funny that it's based in this area and that's the way it's told. So I tell you all this story to share this with you from a book called More Mysteries and Miracles in New Mexico. That's written by a fellow named Jack Cutts. In this book, Jack relates a story of a giant snake in the Pecos ruins that was shared by an old sheep herder from 1838. Now I'm back to the sheep. Remember the Mescalero was talking about it. Now I'm back to the sheep. The story that he shared goes like this. In days gone by, the old man said, the people kept a holy fire constantly burning in a mountain cave. They had been commanded to do so by the Lord of the Aztecs himself, Moctezuma. For in the depths of that dark cavern dwelt a giant snake, a monstrous reptile so fearsome it could only be confined by fire. When Moctezuma left Pecos, he ordered the people to keep the cave fire burning until his return. This the Pecosinos did faithfully, but Moctezuma never came back. Eventually, there was no one left to feed the flames. The fire had gone out, and now no one knew for sure what had become of the great snake. So, these people, he tells the story, not only that Moctezuma was in the Southwest,
right?
That those people were Aztec followers, which you and I have covered a lot of that about them coming and going all the way as far as Georgia, but that there was a great snake, and that that great snake, finally, no one was left, all the people had left, the great snake got out. Nobody knew what happened to this giant snake. Now, Josiah Gregg wrote a book called Commerce of the Prairies, and he reveals a story that's very interesting, and it goes like this. On one occasion, I heard an honest ranchero assert that entering Pecos very early on a winter's morning, that he saw a huge trail of a reptile in the snow, as large as that of an ox being dragged. Yeah. That he witnessed a giant snow trail. So you've seen the rattlesnakes, the way they went through the desert and all that stuff. So you can imagine, you can tell it is a snake. I instantly, when you start thinking about it, I always think about guys skiing through powder, fresh powder.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it looks like. If you don't jump, you're not hitting any moguls, you're just coasting. It could look like a big snake making its way through there. So that's what I'm picturing. But I'm picturing the size of like four men wide.
Yeah.
Down through there and more packed. It's a packed snow. Now, there's one more I'd like to share, and that's the story that Helen H. Roberts wrote about in her book. It's called The Reason for the Departure of the Pecos Indians for Jimenez Pueblo. And in that book, she shares a story told to her back in the 1920s by a 70-year-old San Ildefonso Indian named Ignacio Aguilar. Now, Ignacio told a story that happened to his grandfather. And he said that one day his grandfather and a few friends were hunting along the Rio Grande. And when a group of what he described as very excited Pecos Indians appeared. Now, when Ignacio's grandfather inquired as to why the Pecosinos were so far from home, they responded that they were tracking their snake god, who had escaped from its den near their pueblo. Now, the grandfather and friends agreed to help search for the Pecosinos, and it brought them to the tracks or the trail that they were following. Now, curiously enough, there before the grandfather there lay what he said was a large, continuous trail of flattened brush, and that this group, all of them, followed it along for quite a ways until they found where it appeared the snake had slid off into the river and apparently vanished forever. Now, Ignacio had even gone on to say that they believed it was the disappearance of the snake god that brought about the Pecos people's decision to leave their home because they no longer had the favor of the gods. That he was there to I guess, hunting got bad. You know, you could go along and speculate anything. So all of those stories I bring up because this is right here in the Southwest. This is something that is right in front of us. I never knew it to be a thing about giant snakes in this area.
No.
And it's funny because Quetzalcoatl is known, is the plumed serpent. It is a snake animal, all right, an Aztec thing. How did that get up here? How did that get shared? How did all of this, that's the thing that's so fascinating to me, is how these things and these ideas share. I understand there's snakes everywhere, right? I get that part. You're like, well, maybe they saw snakes, this whole deal. But why are there tales of Moctezuma and the Aztecs? Why was there a plumed serpent painting outside of Roswell, New Mexico? Why is there so much snake worship in this area of New Mexico? Why is that such a thing? It doesn't seem to be anywhere else. It doesn't seem to be growing in any other native areas. None of this, just in this area. So, is it true? Was there giant snakes and reptiles up there? Or is the story I'm sharing more history-based? Is it more to show that the Aztecs were up there, that these people were maybe a group of Aztec that he left to start another group up there, or maybe that they were like the from Game of Thrones, that you're the warden of the north, I want you to stay in this area, you know, and if there's something happen, you send runners and you come back down here, you know? I don't know. It is odd though that at Teotihuacan there's feathered serpent carvings down there.
Yeah.
It all ties in together, so I don't really know. I just know that it was one of those things that as I started looking into this whole deal, I got fascinated. And of course, it doesn't help reading the Graham Hancock War God books that draw you into the whole thing, too. So, I mean, this whole deal has got me to thinking that I would like to look more into it, but it's very, very odd that it's all based on snake, like religion almost.
Yeah, that's very bizarre.
Very, very crazy. Well, I hope you folks liked it. We're going to take a quick break and we'll wrap this puppy up. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Very interesting story. And, you know, like you were talking about, I wonder if there was a culture of Aztecs or Mayans living in the southwestern United States. And, of course, when they made friends with ranchers or whatever, and they told their story of their serpent god, that it wasn't, like, lost in translation, and the guys really believed that there was a giant snake.
That's kind of what I'm leaning towards.
But it wasn't a real, living giant snake. You know what I mean? So that type of stuff happens.
Get these tales of, like, Ignacio's grandfather that talks about seeing this trail and this guy. So I don't, but I'm with you. Is the first thing I thought, because we know a lot is lost in translation, the first thing I thought was, that's all it is they are more preaching about their serpent god, and they're trying to explain it, and then they're not grasping what they're trying to tell them their belief system is, and then they got turned over to all these people just believe there's a giant snake in the mountains and all this. So I don't know, but it's an odd thing. I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, well, speaking of snakes, they're not the only thing that's dangerous. Uh-oh. Also, fish can be dangerous, and I'm not talking about sharks. Recently, a man in England nearly died after a live fish jumped down his throat.
What?
Yeah. Check this out. It says a man in England nearly lost his life after an entire live fish jumped down his throat. The 28-year-old man in England caught a Dover sole, which is kind of like a flounder, while he was out fishing, and he decided to kiss his catch, which is a tradition, according to the BBC. But the fish slipped out of his hands and into his mouth, getting stuck in his windpipe.
Oh, no.
Says the paramedics arrived on the scene and the man had stopped breathing and was in cardiac arrest. Now, this is according to The Guardian. Now, it was clear that the paramedics said that the patient was not going to survive the short journey to the hospital, so they needed to get it out now. And so the paramedics used a set of forceps to remove the entire fish, and the man recovered. The patient has no long-lasting effects from his cardiac arrest. And anything, so he was saved nearly at the brink of death. But yeah, he was trying to kiss this fish, and it squirmed, or he dropped it, or something, and it went down his windpipe.
What's he doing with his mouth so wide open? Are you trying to tongue kiss that fish, bro?
I don't know. I didn't see any videos or selfies or anything, but I just thought you would like that.
But the way the fins work, imagine it goes in, you can't pull it out. Yeah. So you're just like, like that catfish that swims up on your TT.
Yeah, right. What are those? That's in the Amazon, right? That's terrifying.
Yeah. Dude, you know how, man, that would be my, that's my luck right there, to be like, man, my dad died because he was trying to kiss a fish.
Man. Well, you know, I've noticed a lot of reviews coming on for everybody writing for the show. I really appreciate that. But if you really want to help out the show, we need you to take a survey for us real quick. You need to go to podcastlistener.com/expanded. That's podcastlistener.com/expanded. And that'll help us out. That'll help with our advertisers and stuff like that. If you have any stories of your own you would like to share with the show, you can email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. And also, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. There's an additional show you do. So if you like that we do, not that you do. If you like Expanded Perspectives, you're only listening to 50% of our work. There's a whole other show we do once a week called Elite. And you can sign up for Elite by going to the website, expandedperspectives.com, clicking on the Elite tab. It's $5 a month. You'll get an additional show every week, including access to the entire back catalog. So what a bargain for only $5. Cam, do you have any other Halloween parties that you're going to be attending? Are you going trick or treating?
No, I don't do the trick or treating thing.
Do you hand out candy to other ones? No, you don't even do that.
I don't. I'm just the old curmudgeon.
Man,
I don't do that. If I want candy, I just go buy it any time of the year. I don't need to wait. And if anybody out there loves candy corn, we can't be friends.
I like candy corn.
Well, because you and I aren't friends. Because you're a terrible person.
It's not like it's my favorite, but
candy
I don't mind
awful.
It.
You probably like Peeps too.
No, I hate Peeps. That's my brother. That's the marshmallow. I don't like anything with marshmallows.
I'm not a fan of marshmallows. I hate candy corn, man. I mean, I really do not like that stuff. To me, it's a quit. Candy corn's like spaghetti. You're just mailing it in. I'm like, come on, man. I tell my wife. She's like, we're going to have spaghetti now. I'm like, why are you mailing it in? That's just, you know, boil some noodles up and throw some sauce on them. I'm like, what a quit. That's all that is. Candy corn's a quit. All it is colored sugar. It's like having pixie sticks. I'm getting all excited about it. No.
Well, lots of candy is nothing but colored sugar.
No. If you're going to have something, you need to have like a Snickers bar. There was some work went into that. There was some chocolate and some nougat, some caramel, some peanuts. There's work.
You know, since you're ranting real quick, I just thought of a rant. last night I was watching some baseball, and, you know, of course, during any sports game that's going on, there's numerous commercials for cars. And once again, I'm reminded by this, and I got furious. I was sitting there in the chair by myself, and I started to get mad. I've asked this before on the show, and I'm asking it again. Does anyone know why in the car commercials they put, like, say it's a blue car, they'll still have the license plate on the car, but they paint the license plate solid blue? Like, I'm like, you're filming a commercial. Just take the license plate off. Why do they leave the license plate on there and then paint it the color of the car? Makes no sense to me.
That's true.
Do you know that? Did you ever notice that?
Yes.
It happens all the time.
Just leave it off. Just leave the license plate
off. Yeah, just take it off. I mean, they even have like little subtitles at the bottom that says, this is performed on a closed course or don't attempt. I like where it says like don't attempt, and it just shows a person like driving down the street. I'm like, I don't understand. I can't attempt to drive the car.
And they're always smiling. So that's my only thing as well. I'm not supposed to have fun driving the car you're trying to sell
me? No, don't attempt that.
Don't attempt smiling.
Yeah.
We can't have that.
You got any new movies you're going to be seeing?
I'm going to go see The Snowman.
Oh, that looks interesting.
Yeah,
I
want to go see that. Yeah.
When I went and saw the movie It, I saw the trailer for that. Looks pretty good. Apparently, I haven't seen Blade Runner, but apparently it's not getting very many reviews.
Well, those people don't know what's good.
I want to say, you said it was very good. Yeah. I've talked to a few other people that said it was very good. The number one pet peeve or complaint I've seen about it is they say it's too slow.
Well, the first one's not like action packed.
No, I know that.
See that?
No, I know. I'm wondering if this is because of our culture that people now, if there's
good call.
You, John Wick and Hardcore Henry, like if there's just not like action from the get go, they're like, oh man, this show sucks.
Good call. Yeah, if you actually have to think and keep up with the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I kind of like slower movies.
You still haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, I haven't seen it.
You're going
to
love it.
I go to the movies about 3 times a year for adult movies. When I'm talking about adult, I mean something that me and my wife want to watch. Most of the time when I go to the movie theater, it's a kid's movie.
I go about 3 times a month.
I was going to say 3 times a week.
The way it goes, yeah. That's always, but like I said, that's always been my wife and I's thing ever since we first started dating. It's just the movies. That's the one thing that we carve out. We don't do a lot of other, but that's where we go. That's one of those. I don't know. I've always liked films. You'd think I would have gotten into films or something, but the problem is I would have to be on the backside of the camera. I don't have a face for photos.
That's
why I'm doing this.
That's about all the time we have for this week's show. Everybody on Elite will be speaking to you again on Friday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday. Please be careful out there. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hill.
Peace, y'all.